You are listening to KPOO San Francisco, 89.5 FM. I'm Julie Matthews. I'm a certified nutrition consultant, and you have reached us here at your noontime hour on Reality Sandwich. Stay tuned every Thursday at noon for a palatable taste of the truth on topics of the mind, body, and our planet. And this week is no different. Today we have on a wonderful guest who is going to be talking to us about her new book about relationships with Asperger's syndrome individuals and all about what she's learned as a psychologist. So for those of you who are just listening to the show for the first time, I'm Julie Matthews. I'm a certified nutrition consultant, and I also do a lot of work with autism and children and their diet involving autism and autism spectrum disorders, including a topic we're going to talk about today, which is Asperger's. And you can find out more about that at nourishinghope.com. But today I wanted to introduce our guest. We have Kathy Marshak with us today. She is a PhD and a licensed psychologist with more than 25 years of experience as a marriage and family therapist and a business coach. And she provides all sorts of wonderful services to her clients. And she has written several books, including Entrepreneurial Couples and her latest book, which the title is still being finalized as we speak. And currently it's called Over the Edge. But if you go to her website, you may see it as A Sliver in My Mind. And so we have her on the line today. Let's see if we can get Kathy. Kathy, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hey, Kathy. It's so great to have you on today.
Well, thank you very much. I always love that question. Are you there? It's kind of like, where?
They're in cyberspace somewhere.
Yeah, in cyberspace somewhere, exactly.
So I wanted to just start for listeners that might be new to all of this. You know, I have a large listening audience that's very familiar with the autism spectrum disorders, but there's probably a lot of people out there that aren't. And I thought that this show might really help some of those families out there that I work with. You know, I do a lot with nutrition and children's nutrition for autism spectrum disorders, and that includes autism. You know, some people like to put Asperger's on the spectrum, some people don't, but let's just say for the sake of this conversation, and I'll love to hear your opinion at some point, but let's put Asperger's on that spectrum at this point. There's probably a lot of my clients who have family members that have Asperger's, and so it will be interesting to understand them better and to help with relationships, whether they're significant others or even other family members. I'm sure that there's a lot of valuable information that we'll gain from our conversation today.
Well, I hope so. Where would you like to start?
Well, maybe you can just share a little bit about your background and what you've done and how you've gotten involved with everything you've been writing about lately.
Well, you know, the you mentioned a couple of things. One of the things that got me interested in doing some more work in this area is that we have actually quite a bit of research on the autism spectrum, and diet's one of those issues. Lots of medicine that people have looked at, lots of research in terms of behaviors and helping children in schools. But it hasn't focused as much on relationships, both relationships with someone on the spectrum and also how other people that are termed neurotypical, that's kind of a vague term, but, you know, how to deal with the emotional impacts and how to relate and how to understand those different ways of thinking. And so, you know, and I also have folks on the spectrum in my family. I'm a psychologist, so I work both professionally and in my own family, learning how to relate and be successful some of the time, not all the time, but, you know, and so that's the purpose for writing the book. I wanted to get a book out there that helped people look at, is primarily with adult family members, but also if you're raising children, how to understand these delicate communication problems and work them out.
Great. And maybe we can also go into a little bit about what is Asperger's syndrome?
Yes, and you know, you're right. There is a lot of debate about it. If we're just going to go strictly by the professional, you know, like the psychiatric definition, then Asperger's syndrome is considered on the autism spectrum. And it's sometimes distinguish between high-functioning autism, but when I'm referring to Asperger's syndrome, I really am talking about people who are very, very high-functioning folks, but there are elements of autism in their behaviors that is probably linked to developmental issues. That's about the best I can say, but okay. The primary, you know, I can talk about, I mean, I don't know if you want to go into all the clinical stuff here. I mean, one of the distinguishing factors for people with Asperger's in their relationships is trying to empathize with their loved ones and how to express what's in their hearts. Often I will hear from my Asperger clients that they're just struggling with how to express what they feel. They do feel, but the connections between the words and their feelings are very difficult. And then, of course, their loved ones often think they don't care because they're not expressing, you know, in the way that the typical neurotypical person would talk about relating. Relationship issues. I don't know if that helps.
Sure. Maybe share a little bit of what the DSM-4 describes as Asperger's. What are some of the, you know, if someone were diagnosed with this, and I know even this is a wide range. Some people say that true Asperger's people, you know, wouldn't be in relationships and get married. Other people say, no, there's a wide range of Asperger's. So, you know, for the sake of our conversation, I suppose anything that would be the most helpful to people to understand more about what might be going on for them, and I guess the label is not so important, you know, from that perspective, as long as they learn something valuable that will help them connect with themselves and their loved ones. What are some of those things for people that don't know much about Asperger's? What are some of the classic, I don't know, would you call them symptoms that
Sure. You know, years ago, Time Magazine did a series, and they called it the Geek Syndrome. And what they did is they reviewed, they were looking at a lot of things, and one of the things was the number of children on the spectrum, that the population of school children in the Bay Area was growing by leaps and bounds. And they termed it the Geek Syndrome because, of course, the Silicon Valley concept of all of these software engineers and forming families. Well, if you're saying that people with Asperger's don't get married, don't fall in love, don't have families, you're really wrong about that. Mm-hmm. Clearly, people are seeking a sweetheart and want families, and they find people to relate to, and they often relate very, very well. However, the problems seem to come for these relationships when the typical autistic behaviors become very difficult for the other family member to relate to, such as the sensory sensitivities. Mm. That's a common one. A lot of times people with Asperger's also are very sensitive to lights, sounds, smells, or they lack sensitivity. They're actually kind of on the opposite end. That's the problem with a diagnosis. It's very broad. But there can be these extreme sensory sensitivities, and then people will be irritable, more irritable than usual, and have, you know, difficulty communicating. The primary thing, like I said, is that empathy factor. There's a concept called theory of mind, for example. Maybe you've talked about that on your show before. I don't know, but the ability to empathize with another person means that you can put yourself in their shoes and to some extent understand how they're feeling, where they're coming from. People on the spectrum have a harder time doing that. They need you to be very specific about what you're thinking and feeling and concrete in your communication. And when you're not, they go off and sort of make other assumptions. And it's very difficult for them to do this. And so a lot of times they hold themselves back from relating, or they shut down and are quiet and they just don't want to deal with the communication is going on. That's a very serious problem if you're thinking about how a relationship over time deepens as people understand each other better and can finish each other's sentences, you know, and just kind of know the perfect gift to get somebody for their birthday. The person on the autism spectrum often does understand a lot about Buck, their sweetheart, but maybe not at this moment in time. They may be able to acquire a lot of information about someone that they love, but they may not be able to read what's going on with them at this moment in time. And that's significant. That's when people start saying, my autistic or Asperger sweetheart or child or boyfriend or mom doesn't seem to connect with me. And that's one that can be worked on, though. I really want to say on the positive side of this, it's not impossible. It's just that that's a little bit daunting at first to people. They just wonder, why is my loved one so cold, for example.
Right, right.
And there's a great deal of misinterpretation about what's going on.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like what you're saying is that a lot of individuals with Asperger's have difficulty with some of the nonverbal communication that others of us sort of take for granted. And that can then create some wrong assumptions about the person because we're not necessarily understanding that this piece is difficult for them.
Yeah, it goes on both sides. If the person with Asperger's is not good at reading nonverbal cues, and they generally aren't as good, and they don't recognize those nonverbal cues as telling them about the other person's state of mind or feelings, then they travel on what you say, not what you mean. And we have to learn, the neurotypicals among us need to learn how to be much more specific about what we mean. We can't just say, oh, you know. We say that a lot, oh, you know. And they don't know what we're talking about. And so the conversation goes all cattywampus.
Okay. And so communication sounds like an area where there might be some difficulties for the average Asperger syndrome person with that condition. Social, what other types of things?
As you can imagine, this just branches out into all areas of one's life. If you can't read the nonverbal cues, then you don't know you're supposed to step aside when somebody else is coming down the hall. You know, we're reading those signals that other person is going to walk past us. Their eyes, their body language is telling us that they're probably going to that door just behind us. The person with Asperger's may stand right in the middle of the door in the hallway and not step aside, and the other person will think they're rude. Or they laugh at things that the rest of us don't find funny because they're nervous. Or they're thinking that the punchline is coming soon. For example, people with Asperger's often have a great sense of humor and are great at telling jokes, but it's because they know what the punchline is. If somebody else tells a joke, they don't always know what's the funny part, and they may laugh before you get to the punchline, or they may not laugh at all. Yeah, there's a lot missing when you don't read the nonverbals.
And then there's this.
We're talking about things to wear, for example, even dressing. There's so many subtle signals. I guarantee you, you're not wearing anything that you had in 1985. You're just not.
Right.
You know, because we pick up on the styles, and even if something's in great shape from 1985 or even 1995, you know, it probably hangs in our closet if we haven't put it on in the Goodwill bag because we're sort of subtly picking up the latest styles and kind of want to go with it. Not necessarily that that's a good idea, but it's kind of what we do because we very much want to be part of the social scene. And people with Asperger's want to be part of the social scene too, but they're not picking up those nonverbal cues. So they may put on a very nice outfit, but it's just not appropriate for the setting.
Got it.
For example, a while ago, a man was telling me, I mentioned to him, we had this meeting, and he said, oh, how should I dress? And it was very, you know, people ask this all the time. And I said, oh, it's casual. It's a Saturday meeting. We're getting together with this group of professional people, but it's Saturday, so just dress casual. There's no need to wear a suit. He showed up in his lawn mowing clothes. And it was a professional meeting, but it was a Saturday meeting, so it was okay to wear, you know, slacks and a polo shirt or something like that, but you don't show up in grass-stained, torn sweatshirt, jeans, your lawn mowing, your yard work.
Right.
And he said, I thought you said it was casual. And I said, well, I needed to be more specific, didn't I, for him?
Interesting.
But you and I would have picked that up and known it's a professional meeting. Casual means dressed down a bit, but...
Right, right.
And that's obvious. This person was a lawyer.
Interesting.
And he did not know how to dress for that meeting.
Wow, that's very interesting.
So this is, and as you can imagine, if you're not able to pick up these cues ever since you're a child, and people don't know that you're not picking them up, and you're not getting instruction on how to adapt around it somehow, then self-esteem becomes this huge, monumental issue for these people. They're often extremely lonely, frustrated, depressed, and then they're misdiagnosed, actually, as that's the primary problem.
Ah, especially
the
if their
primary problem is Asperger's.
So if they can function so well, you know, be a successful lawyer, then people just miss, that can be easily missed.
Absolutely, because they can be very bright and well-educated and, you know, yes, they can perform a function like being a lawyer or a CPA or a school teacher or whatever, but they're lonesome, they're depressed, and people think they're odd.
Now, so let's go a little into that. So what would be the reasons that they might be depressed because they're not able to connect with other people? I mean, just what was that?
You'd be terribly depressed if you couldn't connect to other people or if other people treated you badly. Sometimes people aren't openly rude, but they will just ignore the person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that person who stands in the middle of the hall and doesn't step aside, somebody might go, gosh, he's kind of odd, and kind of walk around him. But chances are they're not going to ask that person to go to coffee. You can't relate to somebody who wouldn't step aside.
Right.
So they're lonesome and treated badly, often bullied. A lot of times parents will call in and talk about how their child is regularly bullied. One little kid, he's just a doll. But he's got Asperger's, and the kids at school will do things like scream in his ear, come sneak up behind him and scream just to see him jump.
Aww.
Right. Or one bully picked him up and dragged him along the brick wall at recess because this child doesn't know how to stand up for himself. And when you're attacked like that repeatedly, you can imagine your self-esteem is trashed.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you pursue a career and are bright enough to pursue a professional career and do well in it, you still may be going home night after night to nobody.
So they're able, do they just figure out, okay, I get the whole thing about, say, being a lawyer or being an accountant, I can do those mental activities, and I've learned what the appropriate dress is, so I can do that every day. And so they just seem to be fitting in or seem to, on the surface, everything's fine, but then something just isn't quite right with their coworkers, but they don't know what it is because on all the other levels they seem to be integrated. Is that?
Yes, and until we started, this is another reason I wrote the book for adults, is that it's so important that recently we're starting to realize that there are many, many folks with Asperger's out there who are trying desperately to do their lives, but they are not aware that they have Asperger's. This would explain and help them put their direction to learn some tools that would help them do better in life if they just understood, why is it that I don't fit in? And I'm not suggesting that everybody's supposed to fit in, clones or anything. I don't mean that. But we are social animals. We very much want families and friends and, you know, to believe that we belong to our group.
Mm-hmm.
And when you don't have a group, it's painful.
And how common do we think Asperger's is? Are there any numbers on that at this point?
Oh, you know, that's all over the map, too. You know, anywhere from, you know, on the autism spectrum, you know, it can be, some people say 5% of the population is on the autism spectrum. And, of course, now the research is showing that it seems to be growing in, you know, exponentially.
Mm-hmm.
So I couldn't tell you. And again, when you think about it as being a syndrome, there's a number of traits like the sensory sensitivity or the degree of empathy skills a person has or the cerebellar problems, motor control. There's lots of different issues, and some people have them a lot or a little, or one of one kind and a little bit of something else and a lot of something else. So there is probably a range, such a wide range, that some people may not be diagnosed or diagnosable because they're very, very high functioning, and yet they're suffering.
I have with me today Dr. Kathy Marshak. She is a licensed psychologist and the author of a new book coming out this March. And it is a book about being in relationship with people with Asperger's syndrome. And so, Kathy, are you back on the line with us?
I am. I'm here.
Great, great. So let's talk a little bit. We're talking about Asperger's syndrome, and we were going to start talking a bit more about, you know, what it's like to be in a relationship. And in this case, your book talks a lot about being in a marriage with somebody with Asperger's syndrome. And give us a couple examples of how, you know, what someone might encounter being in a marriage with somebody with Asperger's that would be different than other people.
Well, that's really a great question, because a lot of times what makes people frustrated is when they try to talk to a therapist or a friend about the problems in their relationship, if they're not the Asperger's spouse but the other partner, what I call the neurotypical or NT partner. If you're the NT partner, people will say to you things like, oh, my husband does that, or isn't that just the way marriage is? And so people start feeling a little confused and frustrated because maybe they're overreacting to the problems. You know, I mean, come on, you can't expect your relationship to just go smoothly all the time. You are two different people with different perspectives and different agendas. But what this, I wish I could remember who said this, and this is terrible not to be able to quote the right person. That someone prominent in this field did say that Asperger's is extreme male thinking.
Hmm.
This might be a good place to start with it. Most women will say, oh, yeah, I can talk better to some of my girlfriends than I can to my husband about this subject, whatever the subject is.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and we know that women are, this is terrible, but I'm going to say it, in general, a little bit better at listening, a little bit better at picking up the nonverbals. And there actually is some science behind this in terms of white matter and gray matter. Women have more interconnected neurons in their brains in general than men do. And that means that we're seeing the connections between those nonverbals and intentions and meaning and so forth. But the point is that what seems to be going on for these couples is that you begin to feel, the NT partner begins to feel alone even when they're with their partner.
Hmm.
They feel misunderstood. They feel like going over the edge, tearing their hair out. They feel like no matter how hard they try to explain something that's important to them, their spouse just can't seem to remember it. Over and over again, they might say, would you please, you know, do X, Y, and Z. Would you please take responsibility for making sure that our son gets to his soccer practice? And their Asperger mate isn't able to do that. And they complain, the Asperger mate will say, well, you forgot to remind me today. And you kind of say, well, why do I have to remind you? This is your son, too. And it seems like that's a nutty problem. It's like, well, why can't you just adapt to that? When it happens 10 times, 100 times more than it does in other relationships, that's tiring. And it also sounds a little bit like attention deficit disorder. And so at first people will say of their very high-functioning Asperger mate, they believe that he has attention deficit disorder because he's forgetful. He doesn't go to the soccer meet, or he forgets the dental appointment, or he, you know, walks out in the middle of a party and goes and works on his computer, and you're hosting the party. You know, they just go, well, that's sort of ADHD behavior. But it's far more, it's got a totally different basis than ADHD. This isn't someone who's forgetful or distracted as much as they aren't putting it together, that if you're hosting the party, you need to be there and talk with your guests.
Hmm.
On the other hand, the person with Asperger's will often tell me it's very difficult to talk with my guests because I can hear what one person is saying, but if there are three people talking, it just sounds like mumbo jumbo to me. That's a sensory issue. That's a sensory processing issue.
Mm.
And literally, this is often what I hear, that they have trouble knowing what's going on at the party, period.
Hmm.
They wander off into the back room and sit down at the computer and play a computer game, or they sit on the couch and whip out their PDA and play Snake or whatever it is that's on their phone or their PDA.
Interesting.
Now, that would be, those kind of things seem small, but again, remember, if it's day after day of this stuff, the spouse begins to feel like she, what's she doing in the relationship?
Mm-hmm. Do most of these, and I guess maybe we're being general because I don't know if there's enough research, but do most of these couples know that their partner has Asperger's, or do most of them not know and then start making judgments based on what they expect the typical, quote, husband to do?
Yeah, it's a very good question. I don't think they realize their spouse has Asperger's because this is relatively new to be diagnosing adults.
Mm-hmm.
We've got, like I said, so much research, and the schools are incorporating wonderful programs for children on the spectrum these days. So that's just reaching out all over the place. It's wonderful. But no, I suspect that a bulk of the people don't realize they're living with Asperger's syndrome, either the person with AS or their spouse has no idea. And yes, what they do is they start drawing conclusions based on their life experience about the relationships that they've been in,
mm-hmm.
their parents or prior relationships or the way it works with their friends. And then they come up with conclusions such as, my spouse is cold,
mm-hmm.
or they denigrate themselves. They say, I guess I'm just not a good enough spouse, I'm not a good enough listener, or I'm being selfish.
Mm-hmm.
And all those conclusions are wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to really look at this relationship totally differently than you would a typical relationship between two neurotypical people. It's just very different.
Mm-hmm. And is there a wide range of Asperger syndrome? So might you have some that are that understand nonverbal cues a little better? Are there some that might really be more able and interested in working on overcoming some of these deficits? I mean, what's...
Absolutely. Just as there is a range of human beings, period.
Mm-hmm.
And what we know, if we try to classify what's normal for human behavior, we have to have a really wide definition of what's normal,
mm-hmm.
right? Human beings are capable of just this wide variety of being on the planet. So it's also true with those people with Asperger's. So, yes, there are some people who are more able to pick up some of those nonverbal cues, but really a classic, you've got to stick with that classic definition, though, that this is still a hardship for them.
Mm-hmm. What about, maybe there's some couples out there listening right now, and if they don't know if their spouse has this particular diagnosis, but what might be some things that they can say, ah, I see, you know, this might be what's going on, and maybe we can get some support for it. What might be some of those clues that they might look for to get a better idea?
Well, I think we've been talking about them all along here, and I think it really is that inability to understand where other people are coming from, not able to read people very well. Perhaps they have been referred to as geeky or nerdy by other people, and that's sort of a not fair. Not everybody who's geeky and nerdy has Asperger's either.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, those are things that people have heard in the past. Or they were a lonely child who never seemed to fit in very well.
Hmm.
Those are ones that they might want to go talk to somebody about. Now, those can also be because of behavioral problems. They could have had childhoods that were oppressive for other reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you need to sit down with a psychologist who knows about this and can kind of walk you through the questions and start looking at your history and your behaviors and seeing. There's also a lot of physical issues. People with Asperger's or people on the autism spectrum do seem to have more problems with balance, fine motor control, gross motor control. There's a lot of those issues. On the other hand, there are people with Asperger's that are athletes.
Hmm.
And so, again, we've got this wide range.
Yes.
Because there's a number of symptoms. But I think what I usually tell people to do is look at how you feel. If you feel like you never fit in and people were treating you as if you were dumb or rude or socially inadequate in some way, that's not a total definition of Asperger's, but that's a place to start narrowing it down.
So in any marriage, you know, the things that attract you to somebody might be the things that drive you crazy later, or the opposites attracting then become really highlighted later. What might some of these couples have, you know, the reasons they might have come together initially? And, you know, what are there some of those common things like you might find in other types of relationships for people to kind of pick up on?
Yeah, you know, that's a very good question, too. One of the things that some of the women report is that when they met their husband, he was refreshingly naive. A lot of men with Asperger's, because of the social skill problem, are kind of boyish. And women who really resent that aggressive, male-dominating stuff are attracted to this style. He seems like he's respectful of her intelligence and her interests. And so that's a draw.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Only later does she discover that, you know, that he's missing the ability often to understand where she's coming from. He's refreshingly boyish and maybe not domineering simply because he really doesn't know what she's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And then later she's very discouraged because the relationship doesn't seem to deepen over time. He's still just as boyish as he was 25 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Only now it doesn't appear boyish. It appears boorish.
Mm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
In the same mistakes he made 25 years ago. He still cleans the kitchen counter with a whisk broom. Or, you know, leaves his clothes in a big pile. You know, he hasn't ever adapted to, you know, helping out unless she has directed him. Now, on the positive side of this, there are women who say, I love my geeky husband. I love my absent-minded professor. I love taking care of him. I love helping to showcase his talents in the world. These are women who enjoy being the helpmate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they don't seem to have as many problems. It's more the women who expected to have a partner who was going to help them achieve their dreams in life, as well as the wife was going to help him achieve his dream.
Got it.
More with dual career couples, I see much more distress.
And so I think from some of these, I guess, behaviors and ways of interacting with the world, there might be a lack of personal or spiritual contact maybe than other couples. Is this true?
Yes, I think that's what happens over time, is that one expects the relationship to deepen personally and spiritually, to become soulmates. I think that people are naive a lot in times, and they think because there's this initial sexual attraction and everything that we're soulmates, that I think as you get older you realize, nah. More is required to develop a soulmate relationship. And it doesn't happen. They aren't able to talk about spiritual matters, or if their Asperger mate is very religious, they often are rigid about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's rules to follow here.
Right.
To using their religion as a guide.
Got it.
Development.
So what do people in these marriages usually do? Can you have a marriage in a situation like this? How do people make these marriages work? What kind of work do you do with people to help them through this?
You know, I should tell you really fast. Here's how it works. But what I try to tell people over and over again is, let's go slow. Get a diagnosis first, because if you really are dealing with Asperger's, then you have to go down a different path than you would in traditional marital therapy. And a lot of couples have gone to traditional marital therapy, gone to marriage encounter, you know, read all the marriage enrichment books, and they're frustrated to tears because those teaching those particular communication skills don't work with an Asperger NT relationship. They just don't work because those skills are about assuming. Those skills assume that you already have the ability to empathize, and we're just going to strengthen your empathy skills. So it doesn't work. Right. So we've got to get a good diagnosis first. And if you are dealing with an Asperger family member, loved one, child, adult, whatever, you got to go down a totally different path. Then you've got to really work hard on developing acceptance and tolerance and patience. You can't take things personally. And, of course, this is good for anybody to develop their ability to be tolerant, to step out of your ego and say, allow the other being to be who they are and seek a new way of connecting that may not be verbal, because even if the person with Asperger's can get better at that, if this is a developmental disorder, then they don't have all of the wiring there to make it totally sense to you. I mean, you know, you work around it.
Sure.
So, you know, I hope that helps in terms of what can I do.
Sure. So in other words, it's fine that often these individuals want the connection, they just don't know how to do it the way others do, and they might need different skills that they might need to learn. Both of the partners are going to need some educating and some new ways of figuring some of these things out, it sounds like.
Yeah. You know, I tell people a lot of times that if you're not on the spectrum, just imagine what it would be like to have your brain so noisy and so busy that it takes all the effort you can to screen out the voices and the sounds and the feelings so that you can actually relate to people. And, I mean, most people have no idea how noisy these autistic brains are, and that's the best way to describe them. And when the person with Asperger's is relaxed, then they can feel safe and comfortable, some of the noise ceases. Not all of it. And with some of the noise ceasing, then they can be more available to you. But if they're defensive and all these extraneous, you know, emotions and sensory overload is going on, it's impossible.
And if you had a child, in our last probably minute or two here, and if you had a child on the autism spectrum, maybe in addition to a spouse or, you know, another family member, would some of the same tools be helpful, or is it a different approach for a child than an adult?
You know, it's no different. You start with, you know, just being open and a loving being, knowing that, first of all, know that you're loved. And then you can share that love with your child or your spouse. But the techniques are no different. And, well, except, of course, you have to, you know, factor in the age of the person. You're not going to be treating your spouse like you would a child. But it's the same thing. You've got to deal with the fact that this person's brain really processes information very differently than yours and have a lot of tolerance and patience and love. And get your ego out of the way, because they're not, don't take it personal. Not personal. It's just dealing with another way of being on the planet.
Right. I think that's why getting a diagnosis or recognizing that someone has Asperger's probably is so helpful, because a lot of people, since they function so well, don't realize that this is going on. They've been able to compensate. And so now there is this expectation they're going to behave and act the way everybody else does. So I would think that understanding that could be very helpful. That alone could be really helpful.
A lot of people, once they get the diagnosis, they think, well, now that I've got a diagnosis, that should produce enough change in the person. And no, then the hard work of actually practicing skills, you know, changing your view, you're changing your beliefs, that's still hard work.
And is the Asperger person often very interested in you know, wanting to connect in these ways? It sounds like they've had a lot of experience in their life where it's been painful they couldn't. And do they often welcome this, or is it like everything else? It's depends on the individual, and
it really depends on the individual. I've had people with Asperger's delighted to get this news and say, "Wow, this explains my life, and now I can make things better." Then they can get discouraged because it's still hard work and they're not going to be neurotypical,
mm-hmm.
be depressed about it, but at least it explains things. I've also had people who were angry about it and said, there's nothing wrong with me. Stop trying to change me.
Mm.
So, you know, that's the range of human emotion.
Sure, sure, absolutely. Well, we have been speaking with Kathy Marshak today, and her new book to be coming out this March called Over the Edge. And if you go to her website, kmarshak.com, M-A-R-S-H-A-C-K, did I do that right?
Yes.
You may see the book in with the older working title, A Sliver in My Mind, so just be aware of that, and look for it coming out soon. Kathy, I wanted to thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, you're welcome. It's been a pleasure. I love having this much time to talk about it.
Well, I'm sure you've been a great help to so many people out there, so thanks a lot.
I hope so. Thank you very much for having me on the show.
Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. You have been listening to KPOO San Francisco. I'm Julie Matthews, a certified nutrition consultant. And for those of you looking for more information about my work with autism and using diet to support autism, you can go to nourishinghope.com. And a topic we didn't get to talk about today, you know, it is sort of sounded like, and some of the things I've been reading was that, you know, Asperger's is incurable, quote, just like autism is, quote, incurable. But we've done a lot of work on recovering and helping support children with autism and Asperger's from many other perspectives through the use of diet. And so I'm curious, and I wonder how applying some of these similar nutritional principles would affect the individual with Asperger's. For example, wheat and dairy creating opiates, that could explain some of the sensory issues or some of the components potentially. So I'm curious, and I think that anybody who focuses on diet gets some benefit. So if there's anybody out there that has worked with their adult Asperger's syndrome using diet, I would love to hear from you. So you have been listening to KPOO San Francisco, 89.5 FM. Stay tuned every Thursday at noon for more Reality Sandwich. I'm gonna go to the hospital.